This is Flipping the Script Podcast, the soon-to-be number one leadership podcast for purpose-driven leaders and great guest experts who give us a unique insight into what leadership looks like behind the scenes. I'm Shalia Stafford, your host, and I'm committed to helping you lead your challenges using leadership strategies to gain new perspectives, fuel your growth, and transform the way you execute on your success. Welcome back, everyone. It's Shalia here. Today, we're going to flip the script on what it means to lead our challenges using some foundational leadership strategies and tools that are used by high-performing executives leading the nation's top organizations, trailblazers forging new paths, and purpose-driven leaders who are seeking to create an impact in every critical part of their life. And we're not talking about reviewing profit and loss statements or creating quarterly sales goals. We're talking about the foundational strategies that take a lifetime of commitment to refine and evolve. We're exploring leadership, mindfulness, emotional intelligence, stress management, and more, and how they evolve throughout our career. Here's the thing. When you learn and apply these strategies, they can be used in all areas of your life because we don't employ these strategies just for the title. It's integrated in our DNA and it seeps into our parenting, our relationships, and our career. I am so thrilled to introduce our guest expert who will help us go beyond the surface level talk to really understand the opportunities and clues that our challenges will provide us to evolve our leadership. Dr. Patricia Thompson is a corporate psychologist, keynote speaker, and founder of Silver Lining Psychology, a management consulting firm devoted to helping organizations achieve better results by applying psychological principles. During her 15 years of consulting experience, she has worked with clients such as Home Depot, Chick-fil-A, SunTrust Banks, The United Way, Habitat for Humanity, Baylor Scott and White Health, Children's Healthcare of Atlanta, and many more, assisting them with executive coaching, team building, leadership development, and enhancing the emotional intelligence through mindfulness. Her work has been featured in the Harvard Business Review, Forbes, Fast Company, Entrepreneur, Business Insider Inc., and many others. Patricia, thank you so much for being here with us. We're so excited to have you join us on this journey.
Thank you for having me.
As a tradition here in the show, we like to ask a little few fire away questions to break the ice and get to know you a little bit better. Shall we fire away?
Sure.
Perfect. So what is something that you're currently curious about right now?
This is random, but I've lately been learning about drop shipping and printing on demand because I have a nephew with autism who has an art business. And so I've been learning about like putting prints on mugs and totes and stuff like that. And it's been a lot of fun. So I've been passionate about that lately.
Oh, I saw his artwork that you had posted. If it's okay, do you mind sharing his information so that people can check out his artwork?
Yeah. So his name is Malcolm Corley, and his website is malcolmstiles.com. It's like malcolmstiles.com.
He's so talented.
Oh, thank you.
What's something that you failed at?
Well, it's hard to pick just one. But I would say one that definitely didn't go the way I had hoped initially was when I wrote my book. Although I will say, like, with caveat of failure, I always feel like if you learn something, it's not always a failure. So I don't really think of it that way. But that's definitely something that didn't go how I thought it would when I first started.
What does your joy look like today?
I think for me, joy has really lately been just an intentional decision. So thinking about how I want to feel and then pursuing it. And so it can be finding joy in simple things like looking at a tree and seeing it's beautiful, or like, you know, nuzzling my son's head and like enjoying that. But I think it's really just the decision to feel it.
What do you understand today about your life that you didn't understand just a year ago?
It's funny, but actually that I'm a great public speaker. That was something that I didn't know, but having been pushed into some opportunities to do it and getting great feedback, it's really built my confidence.
What is something that makes you uncomfortable?
I would say it's when I can't figure something out. I'm inherently someone who likes to know things. And so when I feel like something's not working, it makes me really want to dig in more to figure it out. And even if it's something glitchy, like my DVR not working, I get uncomfortable and I need to figure it out because I hate not knowing things. I figure there's a solution for everything.
So it would be interesting to see your Google search history, huh?
Yeah, all kinds of things come up there.
Oh, that's so funny. What is one common myth about your profession that you want to debunk?
I think the most common one is just like when I'm meeting people and they hear that I'm a psychologist, they always ask me if I'm analyzing them. Or they'll say like, well, tell me about myself. And I'm like, I've been talking to you for 5 minutes. Like, that's not how I want to engage with you. But I think they always think that I'm sizing them up.
I can see that.
Yeah.
So then what really is a corporate psychologist?
So basically what I do is work with companies or people, helping them to apply the principles of psychology to being more effective in the business world. And so I'm also someone who has a real passion for positive psychology. And so I like to explore things like, you know, how bringing more meaning to your work will help you to be more effective, or how to, you know, get along better with other people using different strategies. I just find that so many of the people that I work with are stressed out, and also just see work as something that's not always enjoyable. And I don't think it's always going to be enjoyable, but I think it could be a lot more meaningful and enjoyable than most people make it.
So, you know, you've had experience working with so many different organizations, seeing different cultures, successes, challenges. How do we find joy even through the challenging moments in our career?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's kind of tied to how I look at the concept of the failure question. And that I think that there's always something to learn even through the challenging times. And I think the other thing just to really think about when you're having a challenge is, are you resisting the challenge? Because I think a lot of times when you resist the fact that there's a challenge going on, you add on all sorts of secondary emotions like angst and anxiety and just not wanting it to be the way it is. And so I think if you can get to a place where you can accept that, hey, I don't want this to be happening, but it is, and you can get to that point of acceptance, I think it gives you more clarity in the moment to really be able to bring your best self to deal with the challenge, but also to be able to learn from it and allow it to make you better.
So what does that really look like when we are resisting a challenge? Is this when we are deflecting or blaming what's happening on others, or just not even wanting to come to the conclusion that, like you said, it is what it is, and we can do something about it.
I think it's more the latter. Like, I was talking to a client yesterday, and I'm not going to like get into the specifics just for confidentiality, but basically he was going through a very difficult time in terms of people challenging what he was wanting to do, people trying to insert their opinions in a very important project that he was working on. And he was spending a lot of energy just basically wishing that that wasn't happening and stressing out about it and thinking like, why is this person continually doing that? And, you know, again, you might not want for that to be happening, but if you're constantly in this place of wishing that it wasn't and just not accepting it, you're adding on additional secondary emotions that you have to work through instead of just accepting that it is what it is. I don't like it, but how do I move into solution mode?
And when you go into solution mode, when we're looking at our toolbox of strategies that we can use as leaders, what kind of strategy can we pull from this? Is this a matter of learning about conflict resolution and what it really is and what it isn't, what it means and how to apply and navigate this new experience that you're having with new information? Or is it more mindfulness or self-awareness or a little bit of both of all of them?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first place to start whenever you're going through a challenge is probably with mindfulness and self-awareness, just because I think for most of us, when we're going through a challenge and we're feeling stressed about it, that's when we're not always at our best. And so I think if you can mindfully kind of look at yourself and how am I feeling in this instance and what am I telling myself about this instance, that can help you to, you know, take a step back and make sure that at least you're going to behave in a way that's more purposeful as opposed to reactive. But I think, you know, then you also have to, you know different strategies to manage your emotions. I mean, those are things we can talk about if you'd like. But I think you've got to get to that place of like being grounded and clear and not emotionally reactive before you move into any of your other strategies. Because if not, they might not play out in the way that you would want them to. Like if you move into conflict management, but you're still stressed out or mad at the person, that's going to look different than if you're able to acknowledge I'm irritated. Let me manage that irritation before I go ahead and do something about it.
Oh, I'm excited to pick your brain on this one because you have my gears going now. You took my thought right out of my head when you had mentioned, in order to even practice mindfulness and to ask ourselves the question, what am I feeling? I know I've heard from so many purpose-driven leaders, sometimes we don't even really understand how to name that emotion or what it means to even get to the point of mindfulness. So in taking that step back forward or step back, when we think about emotional awareness, what is that? How does that apply? And what does that look like to get to the point of being mindful? And I'm going to ask you like 10 questions here. This is exciting. And you actually, in your podcast, and I highly recommend that everyone listens to Dr. Thompson's podcast. It is so good. But you really helped me personally understand the difference between mindfulness and self-awareness. Can you kind of break down all these jargon words that we tend to use and put them in order of maybe where we have to start first to evolve each skill?
So I would just define self-awareness as having an understanding of who you are as a person. So, you know, and for instance, in the work setting, you know, what are my strengths? What are my developmental opportunities? You know, where do I want to go? What motivates me? What are my values? Like all those different sorts of things. So just understanding who you are, what makes you tick. And I think mindfulness is something that can help you to become more self-aware, because mindfulness is basically the process of kind of directing your attention in a non-judgmental way, trying to bring yourself into the present. And so if I observe myself in the present, you know, like say right now, I guess my present feelings are excitement. I'm feeling happy because this is a stimulating conversation to have. And so that's a subset of who I am as an individual. That's maybe having self-awareness in the moment. But I think of self-awareness as a whole as something much broader. So mindfulness is kind of a tool to help you to become more self-aware, would be how I would describe it.
And what about emotional awareness and emotional intelligence? Where do those come into play?
So I think emotional awareness is, again, just a subset of self-awareness. If I'm aware of my emotions and what I'm feeling, then that just helps me to have a better, I guess, insight into how I might interact with different people at different situations or how I handle things. And then emotional intelligence is really the ability to understand yourself, recognize your emotions, manage your emotions in the moment, and then also kind of understand other people and manage your relationships with them. So they're all kind of intertwined. Emotional intelligence has to do more with, I guess, understanding yourself and others and using that information to navigate your relationships. But I think that the foundation for all of it is being self-aware and understanding yourself and how you're showing up in your interactions with other people.
What do people usually get wrong about self-awareness? As an example, where they think they're self-aware, but it's really not self-awareness.
I mean, I think all of us are prone to having blind spots at times. And so I think one of the reasons why people have blind spots is because they might not want to ask others for feedback, or they might not be open to feedback that others give them. And so I think the main gap in self-awareness often just comes from having these blind spots that you're unaware of and kind of not wanting to know. Like one of the things that I sometimes do in coaching is have people filmed on video, and people hate being filmed on video and they kind of like don't want to see themselves. And I understand that. But in a way, it's kind of defending yourself against being self-aware in that regard of how you might look in terms of your communication style. But I think there's some comfort sometimes in, you know, ignorance being bliss.
Right. And so that brings up another great point, that feedback is crucial to the development of self-awareness and leading our challenges, regardless of what they may be and where they may be. Getting that feedback is crucial, but who we get it from, does that matter?
You know, I guess I'm a proponent of getting as much feedback as possible. You know, there could be the odd person who has a perspective that maybe you don't agree with. But still, I think getting a lot of feedback is always helpful if you go in it with the right mindset of just wanting to use it to grow. So, I mean, obviously, people who are close to you are probably in a better position to give you really good constructive feedback. But even within organizations, if there are people who don't know you as well and you have like a 360 survey or something where they're giving feedback, their perspectives are often reality. And so while people who know you well, for instance, like let's say if you're an introvert, might see you one way, people who don't know you well might see you another way. They might see you as aloof or standoffish because they don't know you well. But that's good information to have.
And do you think the strategies of self-awareness, mindfulness, emotional intelligence, do these seep into our parenting, our relationships, and beyond our career?
Absolutely. You know, I have a lot of people who've told me that they've worked on mindfulness in work, and it's had a massive impact on how they've interacted with, you know, their partner or with their children. Because I think that, you know, those same emotions that come up in the workplace can come up at home. Sometimes they're even more intense because you can let it all hang out at home where, you know, we're usually a little more measured in the workplace. And so I think having the tools to be able to manage your emotions and kind of see how you're responding in a moment with whomever you're responding with is great. And also, like, one of the things about mindfulness is it helps you to be more present. And I think often at home, people are not as present with their loved ones as they might want to be from a values perspective. And so it can be a good wake-up call and something that I think really can help relationships.
Okay, so we jumped into kind of talking about the strategies here, but I'm really curious to learn, what have been some of the biggest lessons that you've learned in your career journey, and how did you get started in this?
So I really fell into doing corporate psychology because actually my PhD is in clinical psychology. And so my kind of desire initially was to be a therapist. But when I was working on my postdoc, I was actually at a public hospital and there were different people coming in who told us things we could do with our career. And someone talked about corporate psychology. And it just seemed really interesting, like an opportunity to work with a different population of people. And there was travel involved. And it seemed kind of, I guess, initially pretty sexy. And so I figured, well, I can always try it out. And if it doesn't work, you know, I can go back to therapy. But I fell in and I really loved it. It was a big culture shock. But I loved the challenge and the fast pace and getting to work again with like different sorts of people. And so that was really how I fell into it. And I would say, you know, one of the learnings, even just going from clinical to corporate, was just dealing with the initial culture shock. Because what I found was that I was working with people who were, you know, initially a lot older than me. Vast majority were men, and almost none of them were people of color. And so kind of dealing with my own, I guess, thoughts and insecurities and concerns about how I might be received were things that I had to work through. And so I think, you know, when you talk about mindfulness and just being self-aware and looking at yourself in the mirror and figuring like, what can I do to be more effective and comfortable in these situations? I mean, that was something that I definitely had to work through at that point.
It's very interesting because a lot of times throughout our career, when we get to these cross points that really provide us with some challenges, we can either use those to stay in our comfort zone or explore new insights to better understand who we are with different people and with different demands of different situations and how we can evolve the way we move about in the world. Where did you first start when you were experiencing this tension and these differences with the culture?
Yeah, I mean, I would say initially I probably did what everybody else did, which was to vent in office each other's offices about the culture, if I'm going to be honest here.
Therapy.
But then I think I got to the point where I realized, like, I don't want to feel this way. And so it was kind of like this issue of acceptance again, like, this might not be the perfect culture for me, but I'm learning a lot. And there are a lot of aspects of the job that I like. So let me just stop resisting the parts that I don't like and do something about it. And so, you know, I actually did what I could to help shape the culture in terms of coming up with ideas and presenting them to the boss. And I was someone who built a really good relationship with my boss. And so I was able to, you know, sort of give feedback that maybe other people couldn't give. But I really just tried to empower myself in it. You know, one of the other things that was a challenge was that the level of quality that was expected was really high, and like almost perfectionism. But I just kind of thought, well, if I produce the highest quality work that I can, I'm not going to get in trouble or have someone nitpicking at me. And so it made me better because I was producing higher quality work. And then I think the other thing was, you know, I accepted it for a time. And then, you know, my desire to do something else got strong enough where I decided, okay, now I'm going to take a risk and go out and do my own thing. But I think that just trying to get myself out of a space of being really reactive and negative and kind of deciding, you know, as we talked about, to find joy where I could, that was what I think helped me the most in that situation.
Wow. Launching out into starting your own business and growing it to the level that you have, that's not an easy feat. And I'm sure that challenged you in new ways too, as you learned how to now create your own path and undo maybe some of the strategies that you thought were effective in a setting that you were in before that don't work for you anymore in this new season of life.
Yeah. And I think, you know, to be completely transparent, it wasn't like I just decided I needed to move on and then I left. I had sort of the yearning within me to do something else, and I was too scared to do it for quite a while, like a couple of years. And then it was after my son was born, and there was, you know, in the night you have your infant and you're feeding him, and I was whispering to him like all the things he could become and how he just needed to believe in himself. And I was kind of like, hey, wait a minute. I'm telling you all of this stuff that I'm not actually following. And so that was also part of what encouraged me to just kind of bet on myself and take a risk. And I would say that once I started, I was really passionate about what I was doing. So I was, you know, in it, kind of doing it around the clock, just trying to, you know, get clients and make things happen and, you know, making appointments whenever I could, and was feeling like my schedule was kind of overwhelming, which was one of the things that was actually a challenge at the firm that I'd been with, because I didn't have control over my schedule. People were just putting stuff on my calendar. And I remember I was talking about that to someone, and she said, you know, you control your calendar now, right? And it seems so obvious, but I was so used to just doing things on other people's schedules that I was repeating that same, I guess, level of thing that I was not happy with again. And so even just that, like just taking ownership of how I spend my time has been something that's been really good for me, because that was part of why I wanted to go on my own, was to be more flexible and, you know, do things as I wanted to do them.
So that's interesting. When you talk about being in autopilot and noticing something that doesn't align with your values and how you want to move about in this new journey, and you're trying to get to a point of being more intentional, what does that journey look like? Is it just a flip that you switch and all of a sudden you're just executing on it? Or is it a little bit of go and failure and go back and start over, and now you succeeded a little bit more and over time gets better and better? How does that work?
I mean, for me personally, I think it depends on the area. I would say a lot of it has to do with learning something, putting something new into effect, then peeling back another layer and realizing that, okay, there's more to this than I realized, or this isn't completely solved because it's showing up in another part of my life. And so I think it is a constant sort of tweaking, learning, putting something into effect, realizing that it's working or not. You know, I think that's part of the fun of life, to be honest, is that it's a journey and it's not, you know, you're always learning. I mean, I like self-awareness and I like continually learning about myself. And I think I'm going to continue to learn about myself until the day I die. And so I think if you can go in recognizing that that's just the way you move through life, it gives you different expectations and I think helps you to, again, navigate those things a lot more easily.
So as someone who started corporate psychology, and I know you're evaluating all of these different principles and strategies, what's probably been the hardest thing you've learned about yourself?
That's an interesting one. I think one of the things that I've learned probably is that I'm more impatient than I thought I was. So in some areas I can be very impatient if I'm on top of things, and with clients, I'm not impatient at all. But I think I can be impatient for things to happen more quickly than, you know, might be their pace.
Yeah.
And so that's probably one of them. I mean, there are probably other ones too, but that's the first one that comes to mind for me, I think.
And what did you discover that where that impatience stems from?
Honestly, like I think that like that same boss I was talking about who has really high standards, I think I have really high standards, particularly for myself. And so because I expect a lot of myself, I just set the bar high in terms of like what I consider a success or not. And I think there's some strengths to that. There are definitely some drawbacks to that. And I think I'm, you know, becoming more compassionate with myself across time. Like I'm much more compassionate now. If you think of like the question about a year ago, I'm more compassionate with myself now than I was a year ago. But I think for me, that's the area that I just have to continue to keep an eye on, like not being so much of a high achiever that I kind of take different achievements for granted. Because I think that's something that I tend to do a lot. Like I'll do something, I'll be like, oh yeah, that was great. Now on to the next thing, and not really savor the win that I had.
And I think that's something we can all relate to. And it's always nice to hear that we're not alone in this journey. But what did that compassion look like in the change of narrative from a year ago to today?
I think really it just has to do more with savoring the experience when I do something well. And so this might sound kind of nerdy, but it is what it is. I actually like make a note of writing them down.
Oh, I love that. Yes.
I have a spreadsheet, and every day when I have wins at the end of the day, I'll like write them down. And, you know, a win doesn't have to be something necessarily, you know, like getting a new client or something like that. It could be like feeling like I was totally in the zone when I was coaching someone or something like that. Or it could be a small win, like selling a book and on Amazon, and the royalty is like, you know, not a lot, but it's still something that is an indication of something that I've been doing. So I think I've just been more intentional about keeping track of what's going well for me. And then looking back through the spreadsheet, it really can help to kind of boost my mood. And I think that's been the biggest one that's helped.
I love that. And that's something that I know I need to practice more of. So thank you for reminding me about that.
I think a lot of people who like to achieve are always on to the next thing and don't give themselves enough credit at times.
Yeah. And it's sometimes like we have to override our own brain.
So true. But I do find like whenever you start a new behavior, like this thing with the spreadsheet, I think it rewires my brain so that I'm attending to different things. And that's why I think across time, you develop these new thought processes. And, you know, whereas before it might have been something that was very purposeful, I think it becomes more automatic. So it's much more automatic now than when I started, you know, several months ago.
I love that. That's the strategy that I will be using. And I highly encourage those of you who also struggle with this in terms of we're just always looking for the next big accomplishment. It's, you know, we love it, but at the same time, we have to remind ourselves of all the great things that we're doing. And that leads me to another question that I have that you spoke about that really got my attention. You talked about the boundary experience. And it was very intriguing to hear how you laid it out. Can you tell us a little bit more about how that plays a part in our life?
The concept of boundary experiences comes from existential psychology, or that's where I learned about it. And it's kind of the idea where you're faced with something that is like a milestone in your life. So whether it's, you know, a milestone birthday, or maybe for people, it could be an illness, or it could be, you know, someone close to you dying or something like that. And all of a sudden, it kind of wakes you up and makes you think about, like, what am I doing? And am I happy with how I'm approaching things? And so, you know, I mean, I've had a number of boundary experiences in my life. I would say the one with my son was a very important one. Probably a few years ago, actually, my dad died. And I was, you know, very close to him. Thank you. And again, I just think those remind you that, you know, life is finite.
Yes.
And so what do you want to do with the time that you're here? And a few years actually before he died, and he wasn't sick at the time, I was just asking my parents, you know, what are some things that are important to you, or if you look back on your life that, you know, you might have done differently? And both of them had, you know, kind of some variation of smell the roses, but also I wouldn't have sold myself short. Or I would have gone a little bit more for the things that were important to me. And so that's also something that I think about. And I think that because I've approached things that way, It makes me a lot less fearful of failing. And it makes me a lot more likely to want to try things, because I realize that just because something is in your comfort zone or it's familiar, I think of it more as it's familiar, but it might not even be comfortable. You know, like in the 2 years before I left the firm, it was familiar, but it wasn't comfortable. Like every day I felt like I wanted to be doing something else. And so I do think that a willingness to kind of think about what's important to you in life and to decide that you're going to try something else can be, I think, really impactful. And I know I'm going on long, but I'm really passionate about this topic.
No, please do. I love it. Yes. Yeah. Give us more.
So there was this book. I don't know if you read Trevor Noah's book, but to paraphrase something that he said in there that I think is really powerful, is he was saying basically that failure, you can handle failure because it's an answered question. But he says that regret is an unanswered question. Like, you never know what if because you never tried. And so he's much more, you know, against wanting to experience regret than failure. And I think that's how I feel too. Like, I feel like I can bounce back or I can learn through the process. But the kind of not knowing what if is something that I don't want to have those. So.
Oh, I love that. And even as a mother, it's something that I know we share in common, is we want to have these experiences to be able to one day say to our children, I was scared, I tried it, but here's what I learned. To be able to be that wise leader for them requires us to step into that.
Yeah. And I think, you know, children learn based on what they hear you say, but they also learn based on what you're doing. And so even if I never had that conversation, but he saw, you know, later on that my mom led her life a certain way, or these are the sorts of things that she did, I mean, that's going to have an impact on him as well. So yeah, I think just setting the tone for him is something that I think about too.
And it's so hard for us to remember throughout every season that we're in our career, whether it's the beginning, the middle, or we're in our late stage of our career. We spend 47 years of our life on average from the time that we're 18 to 65, really investing in our career, navigating the complexities of success. But at the end of the day, we get one go at this, and we don't know how long we'll be here, but we do know that we do have this time now. And experiencing the joys of overcoming and challenging ourselves and learning from our failures, like you said in the beginning, to really create this newfound strategy of how we show up in the world is just a gift in itself.
Yeah, I mean, I think a life well lived is one where you're present and one where you're not just sleepwalking through it. And I think that's why mindfulness can be so helpful, because if you're present and intentional about being present, it brings a richness to your experience. And I just think that too many people are not fully present. And so they do have this idea of kind of sleepwalking. And it's not something that I think a lot of people are aware of. But I think you miss out on a lot of the beauty of life if that's how you approach it.
And there you have it. Thank you so much, Patricia, for spending time with our listeners today. Before we wrap up today, we love to have our guest experts leave us with a challenge for our purpose-driven leaders and the organizations who are listening. How would you challenge our audience today based on our conversation?
I think it would be just the thing that I said last, like just challenge yourself to be more present. You know, be more present in your interactions with people, be more present as you're going about your work. You'll actually be more efficient that way. You know, be more present with your family, be more present when you're having an experience, anything, even if it's being present as you're eating your lunch, you'll find that that's a different experience. But I think that by bringing that sense of presence, you will find that you find joy in different places of your life that maybe you weren't aware of. And that your life is kind of turned up the volume in terms of your experience of it.
And how can our listeners connect with you?
So you can find me on my website at silverliningpsychology.com. And I actually have an online mindfulness course. And so if you want to learn more about it, you know, I definitely encourage you to check it out. You can also find me on Twitter at Patricia_ATL.
Perfect. And I'll make sure to include in the show notes a link to Patricia's book, The Consummate Leader, A Holistic Guide to Inspiring Growth in Others and in Yourself, and her executive mindfulness course online, which is a self-paced course to help teach professionals about how to apply mindfulness practices in the workplace. And she also has a variety of other courses on management and emotional intelligence that I highly recommend that you check out. And please visit the show notes at the end to see where to access that. To our listeners, the ball is in your court. You are listening to Flipping the Script, Leadership Behind the Scenes. We'll see you on our next episode. Thank you again, Patricia.
Thank you.
If you found even the smallest nugget of wisdom in this episode, share it with a friend and your friend will thank you. Let's continue the conversation with like-minded leaders and join us on Facebook at Go Flip the Script. Until next time, I challenge you to incorporate what you learned today to evolve your leadership impact.